So if you have someone, Michael, that you're working with that, you know, is in a, they want to gain muscle mass, but then they're like, hey, now I want to lean out. Cause I'm sure you hear that all the time. Cause I know I hear that quite a bit too. And when folks say that to me, it usually just means they're wanting to reduce their body fat, but they still want to maintain muscle. How do you adjust like their programming for someone that wants to go from, you know, bulking or muscle gaining phase to more of a leaning out phase?
It's that's 80% of the, of that is the, their caloric intake.
Right.
And then adjusting, like instead of doing, depending on where they are, depending what their goal is, instead of doing like if I program supersets, we wouldn't do any supersets, it would be more straight sets, taking into account their caloric deficit. And then dialing back wherever we think we need to, because it's not a set formula. Right. You have to see how that person is doing. Mm-hmm. And keep track. When she mentioned before, one of the things that she could do, but she doesn't, she really remembers, she's good at that, as to what she did last week and how she did last week. People should keep a journal, a workout journal, if they're serious about it, mm-hmm. so they yep. know where they were last week, so they know where they were yesterday.
Right.
And so they can keep going on. So, but, and there's where the tweaking comes in. So maybe a little bit more of cardio. But mostly it's the calorie intake,
right.
Paring back on the calorie intake, and then paring back on the volume a little bit
yep.
to match that a little bit. And that's basically it.
Hi, welcome to the Active Bariatric Nutrition Podcast. I'm your host, Kim Tirapelli, a bariatric sports dietitian, and I help post-bariatric clients achieve their fitness goals through better nutrition and addressing the problems that come from typical bariatric and sports nutrition advice that just don't work for an active bariatric lifestyle. Welcome to episode 19 of the Active Bariatric Nutrition Podcast. I'm your host, Kim Tirapelli. Today is going to be a really great episode as I have two amazing guests on, husband and wife, Michael and Denise Pagano. Michael was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, and his interest in fitness training began at an early age of 9 when he was fascinated by the physiques of Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, and Hulk Hogan. He focused on bodybuilding and had dreams of being a pro wrestler. Life takes turns, and he met and later married his high school sweetheart, Denise, and began their family. His passion and interest in corrective exercises and postures started to direct his training focus. He is an ACE certified personal trainer and began his career in Brooklyn over 15 years ago and soon became one of the most sought after trainers in South Brooklyn. Michael's training focus is hypertrophy, corrective exercises for pain management, and posture. He has the ability to tweak your exercise form to enhance the effectiveness of each exercise and will create your customized fitness plan, whether you are a beginner, intermediate, or advanced athlete. Denise became part of the bariatric community after undergoing vertical sleeve gastrectomy in 2018. Determined to come to terms with her why, she embraced therapy and began the deep dive into the echoes of childhood trauma, suffering from undiagnosed anxiety disorder, which would present with eating to cope and secret eating. Establishing cornerstone foundations of dealing with anxiety while losing 110 pounds, she fell in love with bodybuilding with the guidance of her personal trainer husband, Michael. She's a fitness and eating skills influencer, encouraging discipline, self-awareness, and establishing lifelong habits. Denise is also a certified wellness and health coach, mother to two daughters, and a 25-year beauty industry veteran. Denise was previously on the Active Bariatric Nutrition Podcast on episode 10. So if you haven't listened to that episode yet, definitely do that and come back to this one because you'll get more of a background on Denise's bariatric journey thus far. So thank you guys so much for joining me today. I'm so happy to have you both on.
Thanks for having us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know we talked about this, Denise.
I can't see you.
Can you see me okay? Oh, you can't see me okay. That's okay. It's recording. We're good. But yeah, when we talked, I know on episode 10, we talked about your bariatric journey and you talked about Michael being a huge part of that with your strength training.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I knew, you know, as soon, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Are you? Oh, I knew once I decided to, you know, do this and pursue bariatric surgery that I was going to give it my all and be 100% in. And of course, according to what the surgeon, you know, mapped out for the beginning, because the beginning is a little bit slower in pace of getting yourself together and making sure you don't hurt yourself internally and stuff. But right. Once I had the clear from my surgeon that I can start lifting, we did that. And we still started a little bit slowly. Maybe I was about 3 months after surgery, I started lifting maybe 3 days a week, and I walked very regularly. So walking was a main part of the beginning of my fitness journey, and he just, whatever he told me to do is what I did. And he didn't have me jumping up and down or doing anything that was out of my scope or anything that would hurt me. Sure. The main thing I think in the beginning was for me to learn the basics and the mechanics of what I'm going to need to learn.
Yeah.
To take me to, you know, for the future. Because if you learn the wrong way in the beginning, then it's a hell of a hard time to unwind all of that unlearning and learning to do it the right way.
Sure.
So that was really it. It was just, I knew that this was something that was going to benefit me. I didn't know exactly how I wanted to look. My main goal was to lose weight and get as, you know, lean as I was physically comfortable with, you know, mm-hmm. And I really had to take it in stages and see where I was at and what I liked in the mirror, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And I know you said that you had surgery in 2018, you started lifting around 3 months after surgery, with walking being kind of your beginning activity. So from when you began lifting, you said you were doing it 3 days a week, to where you are now, tell us a little bit about how that has changed over time. How has your, you know, weightlifting changed over time, and also your goals with weightlifting?
So from 3 days a week, Michael really focused on a lot of compound movements in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of a focus, and movements that I still do to this day, 5 years later. So it's not like, oh, let's just do this for this amount of time and then you don't go back to it anymore. These are movements that are going to be with you pretty much your whole fitness journey. You know, as long as you want to dedicate time to strength training and weightlifting, then it's going to be part of your repertoire. So I started there, and then I really started to see results after like 2 months of, you know, like 3 days a week and mm-hmm. Getting in there and really seeing a good routine. And then once I saw results, I really was, okay, this is working, and I'm going to give it my all, my real all, right. I'm all in. And he programmed me in, I think in January, 5 days a week split. And mm-hmm. I was dedicated. I didn't miss a day. I didn't miss a training. So he created that 5 day split for me, and it just took off from there. Then at some point in, a year after surgery would have been August, I think in July, I had already reached my goal. I already lost 100 pounds.
Wow.
And it kept going. Mm-hmm. So I got down to, I lost 110 pounds in total, but that last 10 pounds was an eye opener for me. I was very lean.
Yeah.
I was very muscular, but it was a little too lean for me. And
yeah.
I liked running still at, you know, at that point.
It was too lean for me, too.
It was too lean for him, too. But, you know, I'd be like, ooh, my legs are really little. And he's like, well, stop running because you're, you know, so I had to tweak things a little bit. And then we, you know, kind of played around with the intensity and the frequency. Mm-hmm. 5 days a week is a lot, to do. And I think I was a little bit worn down a little bit. And I felt comfortable that I had wiggle room because of the amount of weight that I lost. And, I said, okay, I think we can pare it back to like 4 days a week.
Perfect.
So that's where I was at for a long time, was mm-hmm. about 4 days a week. And then, you know, certain things, then we go, let's try 3 days. You know, you go in and out, right?
Sure. And so right now, where are you at? Like, as of you are now, like, see what you had 2018, you had the surgery, we're in 2023. So we're at, you know, 5 years post-op. How many days lift, you know, do you lift per week right now?
So I'll vary between, he gives me a new plan every 6 weeks.
Okay.
So sometimes I'll be like, let's do 3 days this time. Let's see how it goes. So usually 3 days is a full body days.
Yep.
And then I'm like, and then when the 6 weeks go by, I'm like, let's go back to 4 days. Let's do 4 days and an extra upper for me. and it really just all depends, you know, on how things are going, what my kind of focus is for that period.
Sure.
So I vary between 3 to 4 days.
I love that. That's great info. And Michael, tell us a little bit about, so when you're working with, I know obviously you worked with Denise and you work with lots of other clients, but for bariatric clients, are there any specific considerations you take into account when you're developing their strength training program?
Well, we send out a questionnaire that asks them, all the clients, their goals, what restrictions they may have, physical restrictions, any doctor recommended restrictions that they're going to have. Most doctors will, it's sort of, they have this blanket issue of don't lift more than 5 pounds. Don't lift more than 10 pounds.
Right.
And her doctor was really, really good. He was excited that she was going to start lifting. So he promoted that. Many doctors will not and really have the client hold off, but it depends on the client. Everything's individual.
Right.
So, any restrictions that they have, we would ask them about mobility issues, and I would have them see if they can send me videos to see if they can get in certain positions like a squat, do certain movements to send them to me. Mm-hmm. And then when programming for especially a bariatric patient that has had surgery and has a limited calorie intake, so you have to dial that down and take so many things into consideration,
right,
when programming. So I go more for a higher intensity and lower volume for most people, especially as we're getting older. And it's more effective. It's a more effective way of training, taking into consideration so many things.
Sure.
So when they, and I do program for them, especially core work to strengthen and provide like this, a rigidity to their spine and mm-hmm. to their core. You're getting cut open. That musculature is going to weaken and scar, and you want to provide yourself so you can have longevity.
Right.
So I give them basic core exercises, not much rotational in the beginning. Just basically static holds to build strength in that area, mm-hmm. combined with their regular strength training program is basically what I focus on, taking into consideration their calorie intake and any doctor restrictions, really.
Sure. And what are some of the different training methods that you use with clients to help their help them achieve their goals?
Well, now I focus mostly on muscle building, hypertrophy. Mm-hmm. That's what I like. That's what I enjoy. Mm-hmm. When I started educating myself like 20 years ago or so, and not being just a gym rat, I had an instructor tell me, he goes, look at the gym floor. He says, you see what I see out there? Machines. He goes, they're just chairs. And I was like, okay, that's one way of looking at it. And so from there, I started to train clients at first purely like body weight exercises, free weights. Everything was free weights. Everything was body weight training, mm-hmm. maybe a little bit of bands. And I would hardly spend any time on the machines. Mm-hmm. Now that I've gotten older, like we said, and going through a gamut of from body weight training to kettlebell, TRX, all a little bit of CrossFit. I'm not a huge fan of CrossFit, but as long as you're moving, that's fine.
Totally.
I'm not saying anything against CrossFit at all. They're amazing. The whole gamut, I try to apply everything in the toolbox to a client. Yeah. However, now I really want to focus on like having people, like you said in the intro, it was like, I want them to, a little bit of adjustment makes a world of difference. So mm-hmm. when I see a client doing something, I'll adjust them. It's difficult online. It's more difficult online to do that.
Yeah.
But you have to have the eye for it and to know where the levers are and where the pulley is and all those kind of things.
Sure.
But it makes a huge difference. So when I just basically have to focus on the client and what their goal would be as far as the questionnaire, like I said.
Sure.
But it's more so, I think the question that you asked was, and that they enjoy it. I don't know if it's more enjoyment while they're doing the work, but the enjoyment comes with the results that they see.
Very true. Very true.
That's the best way I could put that. But now I focus more on hypertrophy more than anything else.
So can you talk to us about that? Because I'll get that question a lot. What is the difference between strength and hypertrophy training for a bariatric client, for example? And like, are there different days of the week you would focus on for those different goals or for beginner versus more advanced? Can you kind of just tell us a little bit about that? Because I get that question quite a bit. And I think those terms are used interchangeably.
Strength? You mean strength and hypertrophy?
Yes.
Whenever I had a client answer a questionnaire where she said, I'd like to go hiking. You know, I'd like to be able to go hiking. And I'm thinking to myself, and I didn't say it, but I'm thinking to myself, well, why don't you just go hiking then?
Yeah.
And do you want to climb a mountain or hike a hill? And so I'm like, as long as you're moving, like I said, that's the best part. Get right. Most bariatric patients that have had tremendous amount of weight have been sedentary for way too long.
Right.
And so the best thing that they could do in the beginning is just move. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to strength training, I always say that strength will come and with the training itself, if you put on the questionnaire that you want to compete in training, in powerlifting, that's a different story. Then we would go to certain conventional lifts, which I'm completely not a fan of, especially online. I wouldn't do that online. I would only do it in person with a person mm-hmm. because you'd have to watch them right in front of you, be there right in front of them to correct them on mm-hmm. those full body lifts.
Sure.
So I always tell people that the strength will come. And mostly women, they'll say, I want to get stronger. And I'm like, well, you will if you're consistent with it. Right. So, and above all, and this one always says it, consistency is the most important thing. Frequency, consistency is above. There's three principles in training. There's duration, intensity, and frequency. And frequency is the bedrock of all of it.
Yeah.
And as far as programming that, I usually start people out 3 times a week is ideal, especially even for a beginner, even for an intermediate or an advanced lifter, depending on what their goal is.
Sure.
3 days a week, I would say, is minimum. But it's like a sweet spot,
you know, right.
Depending on how advanced they are and what their goal is.
Sure. So like a beginner that comes to you, you might start them with 3 times a week. And then if they have, you know, specific types of goals, you might build them up based on what they need to reach that goal, you know, whatever that might be. So they may go more than 3 times a week, you're saying.
Yeah. When I was younger and I would be going 6 days a week, sure. Once in a blue moon, twice a day, but not anymore.
Now.
So but 3 days, 5 days is ideal for an advanced lifter. Maybe 6, depending if they want to compete, but 3 days is usually where I start people. And it depends on their time. It depends on their life, their schedule and everything. But, when I do a program, I actually write out a narrative as to what they're doing and why they're doing it.
Oh, I love
and
that.
Explaining it to them. So, like if someone, and so I also try to explain to them that they don't have to be, number one, beat themselves up if they miss a workout.
Right.
Be so regimented. And I'd rather they, like, if they're going to go on a Monday, let's say, they don't have to go on Tuesday. I'd rather they didn't go on Tuesday. I'd rather they went on Wednesday or Thursday and get that rest. Now, and what I also explain to them is you're going to work for your rest. Make that workout count so that you can take that 2 or 3 day rest because you're going to need it because you're going to be sore. And I don't want the client going to the gym when they're sore. And, you know, the famous thing you hear about is leg day. You can't walk, can't get off the toilet after leg day. So I don't want you to be like that and hate it.
Right.
You should be refreshed on when the next time you go to the gym.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Hypertrophy is development of muscle.
Yeah.
It's focused on muscle. Yeah. But yeah. I think that people, especially bariatric patients, they want to skip the work part, and that's fat loss. You it's good to develop muscle underneath and
definitely.
I definitely did. Some people are like, oh, I just want to lose all my weight first and then I'll train. I mean, I didn't do it that way, so I don't know what would have happened if I did do that, but I think I would have been way more flabbier than loose and flabby than I was. So, and it's like using that magic time of your restriction being at its highest and your focus being at its height, and really you can develop muscle while you're losing fat. It's not like right away, but you have to allow your body to do what you signed up for, which was to have fat loss.
Right.
So that has to occur. You know, that definitely has to occur while you're lifting, while you're committed to a fitness routine. And it's so important to utilize that first year. It is, absolutely. I mean, to wait until you're done, some people never finish. And that's not a position you want to be in. So coupling these two things together, because, you know, you may have a week where your weight loss is slowed down, but you may also have a week where you've been the strongest you've ever been in your life. Or, oh my gosh, now I can actually walk up the stairs without getting out of breath. Or, I started off doing step ups, literally holding on to everything I could that was in the gym. I was like, holding on to him.
Sure.
And now I need to hold on to anything, and I'm holding on to weights while I'm doing it. So it's like you have other goals that are in place during that whole magical year of the first year after surgery.
Yeah. I think that's such a good point, because you were saying how you had already lost, you know, your 110 pounds in that first year. And I would say that a lot of that might have to do with the fact that you had started lifting pretty early on. Also, you started around the 3 month mark, just going and getting going. And that starting earlier and that ability to build on it over time, I think was so helpful, especially also with gaining some muscle as you go and getting stronger, I think definitely can occur in that first year also.
Absolutely did, 100%. It all went together. It was the beginning in the first year. It was like Christmas every morning.
Right.
It was literally Christmas every morning, because it was like I would weigh every day. That didn't bother me. Some people can't handle that, and that's fine.
Sure.
I was able to associate that with data and looking at it in a scientific viewpoint. But every morning was Christmas. Like, down another half or down another ounce, or I was excited, but it also allowed so much information for me to be like, okay, so maybe yesterday's meal had a little bit too much sodium in it, or maybe, so it allowed me to manipulate my nutrition according to my efforts in the gym as well. Or like, okay, I burned. I mean, they say, you know, these trackers aren't so accurate, but it gives you a little bit.
Gives
of
you parameters. Yeah. Like, gives you some guidelines. Okay.
I'm eating 600 calories for the day, and I just spent, 400 of them in the gym. May have to, pare it down somewhere.
Right.
Or, that's the reason why I didn't lose these last 3 days, is because I didn't eat enough. I trained too much. You know, the body is smart. It's going to want to preserve you. So, you know, we'll see people, I'm hardly eating, or and I'm working out, I'm doing all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, well, your body is surviving on 200 calories. So good luck.
Yeah. You know, need a little bit more. Yeah, absolutely.
And she was so in tune with her intake that she would wear herself in the morning and be like, oh, I'm a half a pound up. Why? I mean, what did I eat? Oh, it was this sweetener. I got to get rid of this sweetener. And it was just a, it was just a small thing, but it, she was so in tune with it. I was like, you're nuts. But it actually worked. It was funny. It was crazy.
No, absolutely. No, and that's what's great about that data collection. You know, I like, you know, like I said, I always think of it as data, and it's not necessarily bad or good. It's just info, right? It's just numbers or whatever. It can help you with the direction that you're going, for sure. And I wanted to ask, so Denise, right now, you said that you're, you know, when you're doing 3 days a week, you do like full body lifts versus if you're doing, and Michael, chime in too, if you're doing more days a week, then you can do an upper body, lower body split. Can you just tell the audience a little bit about, you know, when you do a full body, what does that include versus an upper versus lower split, just for people to understand the difference?
Well, when programming her, I spread her volume out throughout the week. I do basically a push-pull for myself and for clients, more so a legs push-pull. It depends on how many days of the week they can go to the gym. It depends on their goals. When they put down they want a booty, well, okay, then you're going to work out your booty about three times a week, and I'll spread the other leg exercises over the rest of the week. So she would do, let's say, Romanian deadlifts and hip thrusts on Monday. And then and then after a day of rest, she may do one exercise on Wednesday of step ups or lunges or squats. Sure. And without me knowing it, she did squats the other day, and I didn't program that, but she just.
And now I'm in pain.
Yeah. Uh-oh. So I try to spread the volume out. I'm not a fan of full body days, unless it's spread out, unless the volume is spread out. I see people, I have to wear blinders at the gym, and so does she. They do, we'll go through an entire workout of, let's say, back and a limb exercise, a couple of limb exercises.
And that's 90 minutes already.
Oh my gosh.
An hour and 15 minutes.
75
or so.
To 90 minutes worth.
Yeah.
Sure.
With 2 to 3 minute rest. We rest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we'll look at other people, and they're there for 3 hours. And while we did our one whole workout, this particular guy is on the leg extension machine for that entire time.
Oh my gosh.
It blows me away how the amount of overtraining that I see. And the
totally.
Look, you enjoy it. That's fine. And that's one of the things we want. If you want to get in and out of the gym and have an effective workout, then I'm the biggest fan of low volume, high intensity training at this point in my life, and for clients, especially bariatric clients, because there's so much wasted volume that people don't understand is happening. The basic idea of building muscle is that you want to have an involuntary slow, let's say, I'm being very specific now, an involuntary slowing of your muscle within 8 reps. Mm-hmm. That is the best way, the most effective way to grow muscle. In terms of cost benefit, it's called the stimulus to fatigue ratio. Mm-hmm. Mike Israetel came up with that phrasing. It's basically in a workout, and this is how a trainer should program. You have to take into account every little thing that you're programming for a client. You can't just give a client, I don't program deadlifts and I never will. Deadlifts and then squats and then lunges, and they're not on PEDs. They're not going to benefit from that. The only thing that's going to do is cause them to get extremely fatigued.
Yeah,
and they're not going to benefit from the rest of the workout.
Right.
So what I try to explain to people, and I, like I said, I do it in the narrative because I try to make it more educational than just giving a program. Right. And that is, I try to help people understand, do you want to get to that failure point in growing muscle at the 8th rep or the 30th rep? So people that want to go to the gym and spend all the day at the gym, all they do is 30 reps on everything, 20, 30 reps, and they spend all day there. That's fine. That's fine for them. But I do not program that way anymore.
Yeah, it sounds like more efficient to do it that way. And I just wanted to follow up with you. You said spreading volume out across the week. Does that mean how many sets or per muscle group that you do? You'll do only a certain amount of movements each day. Is that what you mean by volume?
Yeah, basically the exercises. Like on Monday, she, like I said, she may do two leg exercises. And I only give her like 2 to 3 sets. Mm-hmm. One maybe a warm up of light reps, and the other two sets are anywhere from 0 to 3 reps in reserve on those sets. And then on her next workout, and it, like I said, it doesn't have to be religiously Wednesday, it could be Thursday, depending on how she feels. She would do, let's say, RDLs and step ups. Mm-hmm. And then on the third workout, leg extensions and leg curls. And it would basically be from compound movements to more specific movements toward the end of the week.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you brought up reps in reserve. Can you explain what that is to folks to understand like what 0 to 3 reps in reserve mean when you're pushing yourself? What does that mean?
Yeah, that's one way of saying, like, let's say you're doing anywhere from 8 to 12 reps in mm-hmm. a set. Now, this is the kicker. The other way to phrase it is ratings of perceived exertion. Mm-hmm. Now, it's perceived. Perception is not reality. Most people, when I see women at the gym taking the cables like this off the and doing exercises, and if they think they're working hard, that's their perception.
Right.
It's not reality. So simply put, what I mean by that is you want to choose a weight. And this is also what I talk about when I write a narrative for a client. Choose a weight where you're going to fail and be honest with yourself when choosing it by, let's say, the 8th or 9th or 10th rep. Right. Now, that's not, and what I mean by that is that's not all the time. So if you're at 8 and you think to yourself, I can do 2 or 3 more, then stop. Then you can, now you don't have to stop on that rep. I don't recommend more than two failures in mm-hmm. in a set for a body part, let's say.
Okay.
So you would take that to failure. Now the reps, so that, like I said, you have to be honest with yourself. The reps in reserve is what you have left.
Yeah.
If you can do 10, if you're at 8 and you can do 7 more,
the weight's not heavy enough.
Like
gotta go up. Yep.
Like her.
Right. Go up.
You have to go up.
Yeah.
So that's and weight is relative. Like I said, the strength will come. Weight is relative to whoever you are. Just because someone is doing a certain amount of weight does not mean you have to. Yeah. And form is paramount as far as that goes, because injuries will happen.
Absolutely.
So the reps in reserve is basically that. It's basically being honest with yourself and working to that point of failure in an efficient amount of time.
Right.
And you want to have that, like I said, that involuntary slowing of the muscle, of the rep. There are a lot of people that talk about how your first rep should look exactly like your last rep. I sort of agree with that in the sense that your form should be maintained. Unless you're going for higher strength and want to, you know, go up in weight and you do a little bit of cheating, fine. But your rep velocity will slow down toward the failure. And that's what your goal is.
Yep. Absolutely. No, I love to hear you say that. Go ahead.
The rep in reserve can vary week to week.
Yeah.
You know, because like last week I hitting PRs, and then the next week your body's like, no, we're not doing this week.
Right.
Or you didn't eat enough, or you didn't have a good sleep. You didn't sleep well enough.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you did anything wrong. It's just, hey, being in tune with your body, listening to your body, and that pushing it past the point, you know? So,
yeah,
that's for sure. But in the beginning, when you programmed me, a lot of my stuff was, in reps were 15, 12, 10, 8. That was a lot of how my reps went in the beginning. So
in the
it was
beginning,
usually yeah. four sets in that progressive. My mm-hmm. first set was lighter. And then, the next two, the reps 12 and 10 were kind of moderate. And then that last set for 8 was harder. And, sure. I did that for quite a while, mm-hmm. a while, right? We did that kind of progression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's so I was just, like greasing the machine with her, in the sense that it was like wanting her to feel what it was like to work that way with sure. higher reps, and then chiseling it down to right. lower reps and higher intensity,
right. higher weight. Yeah,
but I don't work that way yeah. now. Now I don't work in that sequence anymore.
Okay, well let's talk about that, because that was my next question, was just when you've hit a plateau, or you just felt like you needed to change things up. I know you said Michael gives you a new program like every 6 weeks or so. Tell us a little about what you've done to change things up. What are some different variances that you've done in your workout, besides maybe changing the reps or the sets, things like that?
Well, I could say nutritionally, I increased carbohydrate intake.
Yay.
And for sure. That was when I was at my leanest, and, okay. We had to really retool everything. Sure. I had to retool everything too here, but I really wanted to create shape. So sure. To do that, I believe at that time you program, I think, lower body 4 days a week for me.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know. I was just like, yeah, why am I doing glutes again? Okay, whatever you say.
Why?
But I increased carbohydrates as much as my body can tolerate. I didn't push past, you know, the point.
Sure.
But I also introduced creatine into the regimen. And
excellent.
That really helped with muscle development and the volume of it.
Yep.
And really kind of like, it was just like the cherry on top
right.
For me, and for how the look that I was, that I wanted to go for. You know, I wanted
sure.
to look,
look that I was trying
look
to
full.
Yeah, was trying yeah, yeah.
To, you know, create this, you know, little thing going on here. So, you know, it's still a work in progress, but that's on my end, that's what I did. And then I just made sure that I listened to his plan. And also I
sure.
really pared down cardio a lot. I just,
gotcha.
My main cardio was really Stairmaster,
mm-hmm.
maybe 10 minutes before and maybe after if I felt like it. And then walking,
yeah.
you know, that's really a minimum.
10,000 steps, trying to get 10,000
steps. Yeah, 10,000
steps.
Yeah. steps. But Stay the rest active. Of it was his program. So you want to, how did you shift my programming from the beginning of that?
Well, like, I think we already said, but just higher intensity, heavier
sure.
weight,
yeah.
pushing
yeah.
herself to failure
yeah.
a few times a workout. That's really it,
mm-hmm.
to build
sure.
the muscle and yeah. and not doing the cardio.
Yeah.
You know, not as much at all.
Mm-hmm.
Not cardio's not bad.
No.
At all. I'm not saying that at all, but it's just, if you want to build muscle, maintain muscle mass,
yeah.
that's the give and take.
Just depends on the goals. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
let's talk about that. So if you have someone, Michael, that you're working with that, you know, is in a, they want to gain muscle mass, but then they're like, hey, now I want to lean out. Cause I'm sure you hear that all the time. Cause I know I hear that quite a bit too. And when folks say that to me, it usually just means they're wanting to reduce their body fat, but they still want to maintain muscle. How do you adjust like their programming for someone that wants to go from, you know, bulking or muscle gaining phase to more of a leaning out phase?
It's that's, 80% of that is their caloric intake.
Right.
And then adjusting, like instead of doing, depending on where they are, depending what their goal is, instead of doing, like if I program supersets, we wouldn't do any supersets, it would be more straight sets, taking into account their caloric deficit. And then dialing back wherever we think we need to, because it's not a set formula.
Right.
Have to see how that person is doing, mm-hmm. and keep track. When she mentioned before, one of the things that she could do, but she doesn't. She really remembers. She's good at that. As to what she did last week and how she did last week, people should keep a journal, a workout journal, if they're serious about it, mm-hmm. so they know where they were last week, so they know where they were yesterday.
Right.
And so they can keep going on. So, and there's where the tweaking comes in. So maybe a little bit more of cardio, but mostly it's the calorie intake,
right.
Paring back on the calorie intake, and then paring back on the volume a little bit to match that a little bit. And that's basically it.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. No, because I do get that question quite a bit. And because, you know, as you know, everyone has different goals and different phases that they want to go through. And some folks want to go from the muscle. Now they want to lean out or vice versa. And it's, I know certainly on my side of the equation, the nutrition aspect. Yeah. I look at what we might reduce the calories, but we want to keep the protein high so that they can maintain the muscle mass as they're losing body fat. So that's something that I know I work with folks on doing as well. So I just want to hear your side too for the weights, because I get that question quite a bit. And I'm like, that is for, you know, a fitness professional such as yourself that can help you with that. And I wanted to ask, so
that's how exactly what you just said was perfect with the maintaining the protein intake. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, no, definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. While we cut the calories a little bit. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about, what do you think of rest days? So like Denise, what do you guys think about, you know, active recovery days or rest days? How many days do you typically recommend, or what do you recommend folks do on rest days? Cause we do get that question a lot as well, which is, oh, I'm losing weight, I shouldn't have any days off. I'm not a fan of that. And I just wanted to hear your perspective on it.
Well, when I was in active weight loss phase, right? Because I think that's important, is what phase are you in this journey? If you're still actively wanting to lose weight, then, you know, I think 2 days a week of rest is recommended. How you want to put it in your week so that it makes sense for you, you know, matters.
Right.
I see a lot of people do active recovery days, and then they're really only getting one real rest day.
Right.
I don't know. I think it all depends on how your body is and how your body functions, and if you have any other like pre-existing issues going on, or how your body feels. It's very specific to each person, because, you know, people can be like, "Well, I want to do it every single day," and that's fine. But if you're really not giving your body proper rest, then it could be a detriment, mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
to you.
Absolutely.
So, I think it's the safe thing to say is that if you absolutely must work out or do something every single day, then 2 days a week, just walk, you know, just do a walk. And I see people that say active recovery, but they're lifting and they're doing all this stuff. That's not active recovery. That's working out.
That's working out.
in a totally. Different font. It's working out in a different font.
Right.
It really all depends. So when I was in active weight loss, I rested 2 days a week, mm-hmm. and I worked out 5 days a week. And once you reach your goal, you can revisit like all of this stuff, because
absolutely.
You can see like, okay, you have to take into account, is what I've been doing something that I can continue doing for the rest of my life? Is it something I want to continue to do? Is it something that's feasible? Am I going to be able to eat this way forever? No, you won't, you know. And then there has to come in terms, life balance has to, you know, play into there, you know, losing weight and getting healthy and telling obesity goodbye. Is a full-time job. And that's how I treated it in the beginning, that it was my job. And I was employed to do for that year and a half. And that's all I really focused on. And, you know, once you get there and you actually attain the goal, you know, then you can revisit all of that. So
for sure.
I think everything within reason, you know,
and absolutely.
you have to take all of that, that year of really learning to listen to your body, you know, learning to listen to your body when it's tired, when it needs rest, when it's truly hungry, when you're truly full. Like, I think that all goes in the same package of discovering who you are and how you're supposed to function without having food as your driver. You know, food was the main focus of a lot of our lives, right? And it was the main decider of our day, and we couldn't hear anything else. You know, how do I know if I'm tired? Am I thirsty? Like all of those questions that I can ask myself today and have a valid answer, like, oh yeah, I am tired, or I do need to have rest. You can hear those questions now, and you're able to answer them instead of, let's just eat, or, well, we're not going to worry about this because we're going to eat and numb it. And, you know, a whole world comes open when you allow your body to really talk to you.
Totally.
You know? So I think it's really, really important. It's so massive, like all of the things that happen within the first year.
Yeah.
So I think it should be practiced, and let me listen to my body. And I know people get a little overexcited and they want to do it, and that's great.
Right.
A lot of people have something to prove, like, you know, I'm not this lazy person that I thought I always was, or, you know, I'm going to show them or whatever. I think at some point we have to cross that threshold of trusting ourselves and trusting the habits that we've created, and
absolutely
really listen to ourselves and be like, oh yeah, it's okay if I take a day off today because I know I'm going to put my sneakers on tomorrow and go.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, I know, especially for folks that really want to, start lifting more, I think those rest and recovery days are so important to allow that muscle protein synthesis to occur and for you to, you know, still focus on good nutrition on those days that you're off. Just because you're taking a rest day doesn't mean you drop calories significantly. I think there's all these things to learn as you go through this process. And I know, you know, it's just, it's something that it takes time, you know, and that first year you're learning so much about your body and all these new changes. Anyways, I just appreciate that because I think the message that it's very individualized, but I'm a big fan of rest days, you know, just because I think it's important to.
And to answer your question, I never go to the gym 3 days in a row.
No, you have a
if
day
I do,
off. Yeah.
That's big it's trouble.
Rare. It's very
it's not good.
Yeah.
If I go to the gym 3 days in a row, you don't want to talk to me on the fourth day.
Right.
I'm miserable. So I know 2 days in a row is my. And then I need to have rest day.
Sure.
And very simply, if you're working out, let's say on a Monday, and you're very sore on Tuesday, mm-hmm. the best thing you could do for a recovery is either walk or I think bike, stationary bike or riding around, just it'll help tremendously with that soreness.
Sure.
Just to get that blood flowing.
No, that's a great tip. And tell me, so Denise, just I know we talked about this back in episode 10 about your nutrition and kind of things that you eat pre and post workout, but do you mind just sharing with folks a little bit about your nutrition changes over time, you know, in general, you know, how you've increased calories, or you just mentioned you did start adding in more carbohydrate. You realized that was an important piece to your workouts. Can you talk to us a little bit about how that nutrition has changed over time as you've changed your weightlifting, for example?
Yeah, sure. Well, I make sure that I eat before I lift, that's for sure, because if I don't, mm-hmm. it's a horrible lift, especially if I have lower body. I make sure that I have it's usually in the morning, so I'll have a really nice, dense piece of toast, like a sprouted, like Ezekiel bread or something like that's slow digesting. Not because I have about an hour or so before I go to the gym, so there's a little bit of time for it to do its thing. And then I'll have protein with that, not way too much, and a moderate amount, lower in fat before I train.
Sure.
And then after I train, I'll have either what I'll do is I'll have a half of a protein, high protein bagel, Killer Dave's bagel, what is it called? I don't know, multi something. I don't know. But it's really satisfying for me. That's not something that I would have had year one.
Sure.
No, definitely not. Year one, I would have had a corn thin with laughing cow cheese on it with maybe one piece of rolled turkey. That's about it. You know, I couldn't really do that. Or I'll have
protein shake.
That's it. But I'll have a bagel, I'll have with mustard, and I'll have two slices of turkey.
Yeah.
And then that's like my recovery meal, like after, depending on in the day. And then if it's later in the day, then I'll have, before I work out, I'll have like that bagel. I'll have it before and with turkey or something like that. Go to the gym and then come home, and then I'll have another whatever protein with like sweet potatoes, or I'll have quinoa, or I'll have like banza pasta.
Yeah, that pasta. Like that. Yeah, the protein pasta.
I'll have that with it. And that's how I, you know, incorporate more.
Yeah.
I just have to, I judge my day based on if I'm training or not. If I'm not training that day, then I try not to have as many carbs as I would on the day that I would be training. I still eat them. It's just, I'll have like an extra serving of it on the day that I train.
Yeah, I think that's excellent. I love to hear that you're doing, especially the pre and the post, you're focusing on getting in carbohydrates pre-workout, and then post-workout having that protein as well as the carbohydrate, because folks kind of, we think, oh, I have to have protein to recover, but you still need to replenish the carbohydrates that were stored in the muscle, right? And so we have to eat those as well in the recovery meal to help restore that muscle glycogen so that you can work out hard again the next day, because as we know, you know, our muscles draw upon carbohydrate for energy. So I love that you share those real life experiences and examples, because I think, you know, especially, and I know you're farther out, but it just goes to show that, you know, you are able to incorporate more as you move out from when you had your surgery. And like you said, you ate a lot less in the beginning, and that's perfectly fine because that's all you can tolerate. And now where you are now, you can do more and you can, you know, see the benefits of that too, and how you feel in the workout.
Right. If you want a booty, you have to have a car.
That's right. You gotta have some carbs.
Weight. And you gotta lift heavy. Right.
You gotta lift heavy.
heavy according to you. Like not heavy according, you know, it's relative to what you
absolutely
can lift safely. Everything safely.
Totally. Yeah.
Safety first.
And I wanted to ask, so Michael, I get a lot of questions, you know, so more so really from older, you know, I'd say older, but women as we get a little bit farther along in life, and with weight training in general, I get a lot of questions from women. First of all, you know, how they can gain muscle mass as we get older. How do we maintain that as we get older? Can you talk a little bit about that for women and men? But I just typically tend to get a little bit more questions from females about being able to build muscle mass as we get older.
Yeah, well, most of my clientele, when I was in Brooklyn, they were all women practically. And maybe I had two men out of all of them. But I read a study a couple of months ago, and you can always read a study. It's like one study will say one thing, one study will say another thing. But this was a good study that said you can gain and maintain muscle mass in your golden years of 60, 70 years of age. The best selling point I ever gave women would be, if you want, there's no amount of supplementation that you can take of calcium to maintain bone density like you could if you lifted weights.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest selling point. You can maintain muscle mass and you can build muscle. Absolutely. It's not going to be a tremendous amount, but it will be a difference if you actually put the work in. And when training older clients, I would definitely have them on those machines. Let's say I had them for 3 days a week. I would have 2 days of them doing low volume, high intensity training that's relative to them, and slower velocity on the concentric and the eccentric. Mm-hmm. So very slow. I'm talking about practically anywhere from 4 to 8 seconds between the positive and the negative, just to maintain safety. And that it's not as bad as the super slow kind of training that's out there, where the rep velocity is, it doesn't even look like they're moving. That's how slow they're moving.
Oh, wow.
I don't go that slow, but older clients, to maintain safety, to maintain joint health, or safety, I should say, with joints, very slow reps. And then 1 day a week, if they're able to have a body weight day of possibly split squats, lunges, maybe a little bit of free weight, just to have them move on their feet.
Sure.
If they can, you know, that's the important thing, is to keep moving as much as possible.
I love that. And I like that you're incorporating the body weight, especially for the balance and the posture and that kind of stuff, because mm-hmm. it seems like that can be something that we struggle with as we all get older, is just maintaining balance and overall strength, so that we, you know, prevent the things like falls and that kind of stuff, and maintain
That's
overall
the real functional strength. Training. Exactly.
Right.
When people totally. Throw around that term functional training for older people, that's paramount, is to be able to function. God forbid you're alone too.
Right. Totally. Yeah. Well, what's any advice that you guys could share to someone who's starting a lifting program after bariatric surgery, or maybe for an experienced lifter, maybe any advice that you have for someone after bariatric surgery?
First of all, I would say get a trainer.
Yeah.
Get an experienced trainer. And it is very intimidating to go to the gym by yourself if you had weight loss surgery. If you're still large and overweight, it's very intimidating to go to a gym. And I'm not a fan of Planet Fitness. However, if you go to a Planet Fitness, it's much less intimidating there than going to another gym. And I'm not promoting Planet Fitness. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying get out of your comfort zone and go to a gym.
Sure.
You can get some benefit from working out at home. We all did it during ridiculous COVID.
Right.
But to get out of your comfort zone, and you already got out of your comfort zone by doing bariatric surgery.
Yeah.
So I would say go to a gym and get a trainer if you can afford that, because you're just going to be wasting time otherwise. And you want that guidance, you want that push, and you want to do it safely.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if anybody needs to know tips on whether or not you have a good trainer, there are certain things you could, you know, if a trainer just says, do this,
right,
get another trainer. Because I've seen that all day long, and it's not a good thing. It's terrible. It's a waste of money and your time.
Yeah.
But get out of your comfort zone and actually get to a gym. Besides, and then I'm not saying that you have to do that. You can go walk in the park. Mm-hmm. And just move. Moving is the best thing.
Absolutely. Anything from you, Denise?
No. I mean, I think I said something similar in my previous talk, but definitely, you know, interview them. Don't feel like, you know, don't get intimidated by a personal trainer, or that, you know, they the end all be all, and you're a customer, right? And they're supplying a service to you, so you're allowed to ask questions.
Absolutely.
You know, ask to speak to maybe some of their successes if they have. You want to see maybe some before and afters. You want to ask them how many years they've been doing this,
right.
What's their continuing education? Are they currently, you know, working towards something else, or what do they specialize in? You know, there's a lot of trainers specialize in different things.
Sure.
You know, you'll know if it's the right fit or not.
Right.
You know, if you start to go and you're going to commit, and it turns into a therapy session for them,
right.
It should be about you. They should be focused on what you're doing in the movement.
Yeah.
Not just them sitting there counting, but you want to look, you want someone that knows their stuff. And it's hard because
Absolutely.
You're not going to know if they know their stuff until you get there and see.
Right.
But if you could observe them working with other people first,
sure.
You know, that is a good thing. Like I know what to look for. Like when I see personal trainers in the gym and they're working with people, and I see certain things that I don't like, you know, or mm-hmm. things that I know are absolutely wrong.
Sure.
It's just something that you would have to, you know, just kind of feel out. But, I think that the number one give is that if they're not looking at how you perform certain movements, or like, let me see how far you can, you know, squat, or let me see you lift your hands above your head, like certain
right.
key keystone movements and
right.
If they show you a movement and they never correct you on anything at any point,
yeah,
there's no way that you're a beginner lifter and you're doing every single movement correct.
It's very impossible.
So if they have never corrected you or moved your arm or told you to do it, get a different trainer.
Yeah.
Because I can guarantee you, you're doing at least one of those movements wrong.
Right.
We've all been there. We've all
totally.
Been there.
Yeah. All been Gosh.
There. He still corrects me to this day, and I'm happy because when he does, it's like, boom! I feel it now.
Yeah.
Now I can feel it. You know, you could just do this, right?
Sure. Boom.
But what am I working out? What muscle are we focused on?
Yeah. What are we doing? Right.
You could do something as little as bring it in here, and now I feel it. You know,
right.
Very small little things.
It just saves time. It makes your workout so much more effective, efficient. And I personally think having a second set of eyes on you and giving you that feedback is so helpful. Because like you said, yeah, you don't know. Somebody's just getting, you're doing stuff. And oh gosh, I haven't even been focusing on the muscle group that this exercise is meant for because I'm not in the right form. But you don't know that, you know? And I think having an expert there is so much, you know, so such good feedback and helpful for you.
It could be something as simple. Like I see this all the time when people do RDLs. It's like chronic. It's an epidemic because like I would always do them with my head up looking at the mirror, right?
Sure.
And it's just simply your neck should be, you know, neutral.
Right.
You see it all the time. I see it everywhere. Everyone posts their little things online and I'm like, oh, their neck.
Yeah.
But just having that second set of eyes, like you said,
so helpful.
And scientifically, that's if you're, neck is propped up, you can potentially shut off part of the posterior chain. So
yeah.
you want to be neutral.
Right. Yeah, I love that. No, that's such a good point. And so, well, let me just summarize this. So first of all, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for your time today. I so appreciate it because I think this information is so helpful because I know in my previous episodes, we've talked about some strength training and resistance training and, you know, but I like to hear how you've actually implemented things with a real person and the programming and the advice that you've given today, Michael, and especially Denise from your perspective, which is a bariatric client who's, you know, been utilizing strength training to really change your body composition after surgery. I think it's just been so helpful, that information. And I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. It's always fun to talk with you, Kevin.
You guys are awesome. Well, tell everybody, where can we find more about you? You know, where they can contact you guys for questions and Michael, your business, if you don't mind.
You can get me on Instagram at fit_body_con, CON. So fit_body_con, fitbodycon.
And you can find me at Crunchy Sleever.
Awesome.
You can find us both there. If you can't find him, you can contact me, whichever is fine. We also have another page. It's our coaching page, but we're retooling a lot of everything there, the coaching platform that we have and the way we deliver programs, where we're tweaking that a little bit. He's still providing coaching. So if you're interested in working with Michael on one-to-one, just send us a message and we'll get your ball rolling.
I love it. Oh, so,
and
awesome.
You can also email it bodyforgedpt.
Okay.
bodyforgedpt@gmail.com.
Okay. And I'm going to put that all in the show notes here at the bottom so that folks can just click on that easily and then they'll be able to find you guys. So get into contact. And I highly recommend it, you guys, because you can see Michael knows his stuff. Denise is a living example of implementing all these great changes and workouts and mindset changes too. And that's why I just so appreciate everything that you share too, Denise, on your Instagram page, because you give real examples of living this life. And I just appreciate your time, both of you guys, today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Awesome. Our pleasure.
Yeah. So you guys, if you want to watch this episode, because you should, because seeing Michael and Denise together is amazing, you could go onto my YouTube channel, which is Active Bariatric Nutrition. You can also follow me on Instagram at Active Bariatric, and I also have a Facebook and TikTok page. And if you're interested in learning more about my one-to-one bariatric nutrition coaching services, you can reach out to me through Instagram or on my website, which is www.activebariatricnutrition.com. And guess what? We are going to do this again next week. So thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time. And Denise and Michael, thank you again, guys.